Welcome to what will be an explosive Hitman Chronicles. This is your host, the original great Rob Silver, and God Lord, there is still boxing going on as I begin this podcast. You can call today the night of the upsets. We've had so many upsets today. The biggest one being, and your boy, the OG Rob Silver, predicted it right down to the T. I predicted exactly what was going to happen, and it happened. Alexander Usyk is the first undisputed heavyweight champion of the world in 25 years. As we will break it down, but exactly how I predicted the fight would go in the preview show that I released early last week is exactly what went down, but we'll get to that. We've got a bunch of fights to talk about before we get to that, and then we still got one more fight after that. First and foremost, that wife abuser, that domestic violence son of a bitch, Sergey Kovalev, it's time for him to retire. It's time for him to retire. He fought undefeated Robin Safar, and Safar did what he wanted to do against a washed-up 41-year-old Sergey Kovalev who has no business fighting. He should retire. I gave Safar 9 out of the 10 rounds. One judge actually gave Kovalev 6 rounds. What was he looking at? Kovalev was lucky that there wasn't more than 5 seconds left in the fight as he got dropped right before the bell rang. He got up and I had it 99-90 so far. Kovalev loses by split decision. There have been some ridiculous scorecards, and there was another one later on in the episode on that night that I'll talk about in the episode. Congratulations to Robin Safar. This will probably earn him a title shot either at Jai Opetaia, we will segue to him in a moment, or Chris Billum Smith, who fights next month. We will see. As far as Sergey Kovalev goes, the only fight he should be having is in a courtroom getting ready to be convicted for beating his woman. Man, fuck that dude. He's washed up. He has never been the same since Andre Ward knocked him out in their rematch back in 2017. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was the first of many fights we are going to talk about today on the podcast. These fights that occurred first in Saudi Arabia. Frank Sanchez, another upset. Ajit Kabayal fought Frank Sanchez. Both men had the exact same records, identical records coming into this fight. 24 wins, no losses, 17 KOs. Frank Sanchez was the favorite. Frank Sanchez got his ass beat from pillar to post, round after round after round. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is what happens when you're A, inactive, and B, you fight bum after bum after bum after bum. Sanchez, the only live fighter he ever fought, in my opinion, was Effie Ajagba, and he beat Ajagba. But other than that, he beat Uber driver after Uber driver. And in his second major test, he got beat. He got beat from pillar to post, got dropped twice in the seventh round with body shots. Referee counted him out. Frank Sanchez, who was ranked number 2 by one organization, number 4 by another criminal cartel organization. He was ranked at all 4 organizations. No title shot for you, baby. You're going back to the back of the line. Do not pass go. Maybe you could get a rematch with Effie Ajagba, because Ajagba has improved since he lost to Frank Sanchez. We will see, but congratulations to Ajit. He fought a hell of a fight. Ajit Kabayel now puts himself in line. Maybe he gets a shot at Alexander Usyk. Ooh, we haven't got there yet. We haven't got there yet. There is a rematch clause in the Usyk Fury fight, but we will see. We will see. We will see. I mean, I am so impressed by Alexander Usyk, but we won't get there yet. We got to talk about another upset. The third consecutive upset we're talking about tonight. The night of the upsets. An unknown fighter named Anthony Kakashi beat up the undefeated IBF Criminal Cartel Junior Lightweight Champion Joe Cordino. Dropped him in the third round. And then Kakashi was pummeling Cordina up against the ropes in round 6 and 7. And in the 8th round, Cordina was out on his feet when the referee finally stopped the fight. Cordina was a 7-1 favorite. Another huge upset on the night of the upsets. Anthony Kakashi is now the IBF Criminal Cartel 130-pound champion. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love upsets. I love upsets because it just goes to show you anything can happen in the squared circle. We almost had another upset. Jio Pitaya, who I consider the best cruiserweight on the planet, got off to a strong start against Maurice Bredis in the rematch in their second fight. And the first 7-8 rounds, it was all on Pitaya. But then Bredis came roaring back, and came on strong, but it was a too little, too late. The 39-year-old Maurice Bredis has had a tremendous career, and the guys he has lost to, Opetaia and Alexander Usyk, great segue into the main fight. There's no shame on the greatest fight ever to come out of Latvia. Maurice Bredis, I believe, deserves a mention, deserves to be on the ballot at least for the International Boxing Hall of Fame when he finally does retire, 3 years after he retires. The man has had a tremendous career. He lost to two great fighters in Alexander Usyk and Jio Pitaia. It's no disgrace. And in all three fights, he gave both Usyk and Pitaia hell. It wasn't like it was an easy one-sided beating. He gave them hell. So congratulations to the 39-year-old Bredis. He fought better than I expected. I said he was done. He wasn't. He still has something left, but I think before he loses what he has left, he needs to retire. There's nothing left for him to prove. He's had a tremendous career. As far as Opetai goes, I would love to see him fight a Chris Billum Smith or even a Zerto Ramirez or a Lawrence Okolie. I would love to see him fight one of those guys as he continues to set a legacy at the cruiserweight division. Now, on to the main event in Saudi Arabia for the first undisputed heavyweight champion of the world since Lennox Lewis was stripped of his WBA title in the year 2000, 2001, somewhere around that time. Alexander Usyk, the Criminal Cartel Organization's IBF, WBO, and WBA champion against Tyson Fury, the WBC champion, two-time heavyweight champion of the world. Tyson Fury was a huge favorite. As you know, on my preview show that I recorded and that I released a few days ago, I was the only one of a six-man panel. We had six prognosticators on the show. Luigi, Kobe, Remy, Rob, and Terrence. All five predicted that Usyk was too big, too strong for Alexander Usyk. I said that Tyson Fury had lost not one step, but two steps because of his wild series versus Deontay Wilder, no pun intended. He took an inane amount of punishment in that third fight, a fight that left both men not the same. Neither man, Deontay Wilder or Tyson Fury, has been the same since that third fight. And I said that Usyk would find a way. He might even stun or knock down Fury, as I mentioned in the preview podcast. And he did. I'll get into the entire review of the fight in a moment. But I was right. And look, I've been wrong a few times in the last year. I mean, I thought Terrence Crawford would get beat up by Errol Spence. I was wrong. I thought Jermell Charlo would find a way to beat Canelo Alvarez. I was wrong. This time, I was one. And I thought Devin Haney would beat Ryan Garcia. I was wrong. This time, I was on the... I hit the nail on the proverbial head. I said Alexander Usyk would win by split decision, and he did. Let's go to the... Let's break it down. I gave Usyk two of the first three rounds. I thought Usyk in rounds one and rounds three controlled the action, throwing his jab and landing that left cross on a consistent basis. I didn't like the fact that Fury was moving a lot. I thought it was unnecessary movement, and he was up against the ropes a lot. In the second round, Fury landed some nice rights to the body and some nice right uppercuts, and I thought he took the second round. I knew Fury, the game plan would be for him to go to the body, but you can't go to the body if you're moving. He kept moving. He kept moving and moving and moving. Kudos to Tyson Fury, because beginning in round four, he began to come forward and he began to bang that body. He was ripping Usyk to the body and he was landing a vicious right uppercut that stunned Usyk in rounds four and in round six. In round six, Usyk was in trouble and Fury was landing combinations. Fury was having a ball. Also, Fury rounds one, rounds four, rounds five, and round six, all three rounds on my scorecard, Fury was dominating. And after six rounds, Usyk was hurt and Fury was on a roll. Usyk's right eye was bleeding. And I thought, man, my prediction, you could throw that out the window. It's going to be all Fury from now on, because Fury's the bigger guy, and Usyk looked like he couldn't do anything. He couldn't get past that right hand. He couldn't get past that right uppercut. He couldn't get past that right cross. He couldn't get past that right to the body. But what do great fighters do? What do all-time great legendary fighters do? And when Usyk retires, he's going to go down as a legendary fighter. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, on the preview podcast, I compared Usyk to Evander Holyfield. Because like Evander Holyfield in Evander Holyfield's prime against bigger fighters, Usyk finds a way to overcome adversity, even when he's up against the wall. Like Evander Holyfield did in his fights versus George Foreman and in his second fight versus Riddick Bowe. He found a way to overcome adversity. And beginning with round seven, Usyk adjusted and he began landing that left cross over and over again. Round seven, round eight, he continued to use the right jab and he continued to give Fury a lot of head movement, and Fury kept backing up. And when Fury came forward, he was much more successful than when he was moving. Usyk was landing that left cross over and over again. So I gave Usyk round seven, Usyk round eight. After eight rounds, I had it dead even. And Todd Grisham, who I was watching on a bootleg feed, fuck that dude, he's horrible, talking about, oh, whoever this referee is, I think he's too small to handle these behemoths. Learn the referee's name, you fucking nincompoop. That's Mark Nelson, who along with Thomas Taylor is the best referee. Those are the two best referees in boxing right now. Mark Nelson called a hell of a fight in the ninth round. He did a tremendous job. The first half of the ninth round towards the latter half. The first 2 minutes of the ninth round, Fury began to land that right uppercut and rights to the body again. And Fury stunned Usyk. And now the tide looked to have been turned. And while they were in a heated exchange, Usyk staggered Fury with a beautiful left cross, right cross combination. And now Fury was in deep trouble. Usyk landed shot after shot until he finally dropped Fury. Give Mark Nelson credit. He could have stopped the fight, but he gave Tyson Fury the benefit of doubt because, if we remember, in his first fight and his third fight against Deontay Wilder, he was in severe trouble and he found a way to overcome that to win those. Well, the first fight was a draw. The second fight, to win the second fight by KO. So Nelson gave him a standing eight count and gave him a chance. The bell rang. The bell saved Tyson Fury. Tremendous round. This could be the round of the year, that ninth round, because Usyk was hurt, and then he staggered Fury. He badly hurts Fury. And I mentioned in the podcast, in the preview podcast, that Fury could hurt Usyk. Usyk. I said both men would get hurt in the fight. Both men did get hurt. I also said both men might go down. Well, only Fury went down. And so after nine rounds, I had Fury up 2 points because of the knockdown. And then rounds 10 and round 11, Usyk landed that left cross over and over again. One thing Usyk did that was brilliant throughout the entire fight, ladies and gentlemen, is that he is 6 inches. He's 4 to 6 inches shorter than Tyson Fury. So when he threw that straight left, that left cross, he would aim for the body. He couldn't miss. He didn't try and put his chin out there by trying to go over the top. He would be left very vulnerable like that. Instead, he threw that straight left, and whether it landed on the chest, it scored. When Fury was ducking down, the left cross would land. And in rounds 10 and 11, he landed that left to the body. He landed that left to the chest. He landed that left to the chin over and over again to take rounds 10 and round 11. And on my scorecard, I had him up by 4 points going into the 12th and final round. And then in the 12th round, I got to give Fury credit. He had lost the last 5 rounds on my scorecard, and Fury knew that the fight was in the balance. And Fury hurt Usyk again with another right hand in the 12th round. The fight ended. I had it 115-112 Usyk, which one judge had. One judge had Fury winning 7 rounds. I don't know where he got that from. 114-113 Fury. And then the final judge had it 114-113. Usyk by split decision, as I predicted. Usyk, the new undisputed heavyweight champion of the world. It won't last long. The IBF is probably going to strip him any moment because they want him to face their IBF number one contender. But Usyk and Fury have a rematch clause, and you know Fury is probably going to It's probably going to say, look, I want the rematch. He's going to execute his rematch clause. And I don't blame him. Look, I said Tyson Fury's lost more than a step. He's lost a couple of steps. He took a lot of punishment in this fight. He's taken a lot of punishment in his fights with Deontay Wilder. Now his fight with Alexander Usyk. He'll be 36 in a few months. Go ahead, get that rematch. Execute that rematch clause. And, you know, maybe he wins. I'm thinking right now, Usyk does what he did against Joshua. He finds a way to win a second time. For a second straight time. Ladies and gentlemen, I compare Usyk to Evander Holyfield. And now the comparisons are complete. Alexander Usyk and Evander Holyfield are the only two fighters in the history of boxing to be undisputed cruiserweight and undisputed heavyweight champion of the world. Both men, Holyfield would have won a gold medal at the 84 Olympics if he wasn't robbed by a referee. Usyk was a gold medalist. Usyk was undisputed cruiserweight champion of the world. Evander Holyfield was undisputed cruiserweight champion of the world. Alexander Usyk is now the undisputed heavyweight champion of the world. Evander Holyfield was undisputed heavyweight champion of the world. Both men, aggressive fighters with great jabs that do combinations and beat bigger opposition. Alexander Usyk is the Ukrainian version of Evander Holyfield. And Alexander Usyk, after making history tonight, is already an all-time great. And he's going to go down as a legendary fighter. And he, right now, could eventually lay claim to being the greatest fighter ever to come out of the Ukraine. He still has some work to do before he can capture that title to lay claim to the greatest Ukrainian fighter of all time. But the dude's a class act, and it's hard not to root for that guy, man. That guy is a fighter's fighter. He fights everybody. He ducks nobody. And every one of his fights is, I railed about the Daniel Dubois fiasco. I thought he got knocked out by Dubois. He got lucky. They called it a low blow. But Usyk got up and he went to knock out Dubois a few rounds later. He got away with one. Maybe he should give Dubois a rematch later on after his series with Fury is over. Congratulations to Alexander Usyk. Now, he's the Hitman Chronicles Fighter of the Week. Nobody else can even come close to laying that claim, okay? Now, he's the leading contender for the Hitman Chronicles Fighter of the Year. And now, before we talk about... we had another upset tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Before we talk about the Emmanuel Navarrete fight, Brian Norman won a criminal cartel vacant title, a welterweight title, with a spectacular 10th-round knockout over the heavily favored Giovanni Santillan. Congratulations to Brian Norman Jr. No one thought he had a shot at winning tonight, and he overcame all odds to win an impressive 10th-round knockout. And ladies and gentlemen, look at the upsets we had tonight. Usyk versus Fury was a huge upset. Norman over Santillan, huge upset. Kakachi over Cordina, huge upset. What were the other upsets? Before I forget, Caballo battering, giving Frank Sanchez a one-sided beating, and Safar hopefully beating Kovalev into retirement. The night of the upsets here, both in Saudi Arabia and both in America. And now I'm about to go watch the Emmanuel Navarrete fight, and let's see if that one is too an upset. We'll see. I'm gonna pause this. You won't notice anything because I'll be right back to finish the podcast after I watch Emmanuel Navarrete try and win another world title at lightweight. And another upset. Ladies and gentlemen, mark this date down. Saturday, May 18th. 2024 will always be known as the night of upsets, the day of upsets. We had so many upsets today. The two fights on ESPN tonight, Brian Norman knocking out Santillan, and now Dennis Baranchik with a 12-round split decision win over Emmanuel Navarrete. Of course, we had Usyk beating Fury. We had Caballel beating Frank Sanchez. We had Kakache defeat Joe Cordina. And Safar beat up Sergey Kovalev. Six upsets in one 24-hour period. Saturday, May 18th, 2024. This was a very tough fight to score, Navarrete versus Baranchik. I actually had it 116-112 Navarrete, but there were several rounds, five or six rounds, that it could have gone either way. So even though my scorecard was 116-112 Navarrete, easily half of those rounds I gave Navarrete, you could have given to Baranchuk and vice versa. I put my hat out to Baranchuk. I didn't think he had a chance to beat Navarrete. Navarrete has no punching power. He hit Baranchuk with some flush hooks and uppercuts and crosses and body shots, and Baranchuk never flinched. He kept coming. He kept giving Navarrete awkward angles. Both men landed the most awkward of awkward shots. It was a highly entertaining fight. Not a great fight because both men have awkward styles. So what does this result what does this result in the future for both fighters? Baranchuk will probably now go into all Ukraine showdown with Vasily Lomachenko to unify those two criminal cartel alphabet soup titles. Navarrete, he could fight Shakur finally. I don't think Navarrete will go back down to 130 pounds. I don't think he can make that weight limit. Navarrete has not had punching power since featherweight. He hasn't knocked out anybody in a long time. And he just doesn't have the punching power anymore. At 135, with the wear and tear of all that offense that he throws, the awkwardness and the punishment he's taken throughout his career, his shelf life is very limited right now. So if I was Navarrete, I'd try to get as much money as possible to fight Shakur Stevenson next. But or Keyshawn Davis, since they're both on the top rank. Fight one of the up-and-coming lightweights. As far as Dennis Baranchuk goes, you have a tailor-made fight between him and Lomachenko, two Ukrainians, to unify two titles. Because I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, I don't think Lomachenko wants to fight Shakur Stevenson. I don't think that fight's ever going to happen. I think I think Lomachenko might even retire after beating Baranchuk if they fight next. Don't be surprised. I don't think Lomachenko wants to fight Shakur Stevenson. That fight could have been made years ago. It was never made. They have the same promoter. And now that Shakur has one fight left on his top rank, on his top rank contract, who is Shakur Stevenson going to fight for next? I don't think it's going to be top rank. Bob Arum has completely mishandled his career. I wouldn't be surprised if it's Matchroom. If I was Shakur Stevenson, ladies and gentlemen, this is what I would do. And I don't know if he does this. I doubt if he does it. Go to Golden Boy. Golden Boy has tailor-made lightweights for him. Also, if he wants to go to Matchroom, they've got tailor-made lightweights for him. And you also have a potential showdown with Devin Haney at a catchweight like 142, 143. You could also sign with Golden Boy, and depending on what happens with Ryan Garcia in, 3 days when the New York State Athletic Commission comes out with their findings later this week, you could fight Ryan Garcia at a catchweight, 142, 143. We'll see. If I was Shakur, I'd get the hell out of Bob Arum's way. I'd get the hell out of Top Rank because they are ruining his career just like they ruined Terrence Crawford's career. They're not giving him any major fights. He's fighting guys that he has that he's levels above. It's time for Shakur to fight guys on his level. The Tank Davises, the Vasily Lomachenko. And Lomachenko versus Shakur should have been made a long time ago. That's a strike against Bob Arum. How do you have these two talented lightweights on your roster and you've never put them together in the ring to face each other? It makes no sense to me. And don't give me that I went to fight for the Ukraine nonsense. Twice Shakur wanted to fight Lomachenko. Both times he told the world, oh, I got to go fight for my country. And then when he comes back, he fights Kambosos instead of Shakur. And I doubt if he fights Shakur after Shakur's next fight. Don't be surprised if you see Lomachenko versus Baranchuk. And now on to my Ask Rob Silva Q&A session of the podcast. Okay, I have several questions. There won't be any historical overview today on the podcast because, A, no one of significance passed away. B, we had so many fights that we were covering on this episode that I'm going to end the podcast with my Ask Rob Silva portion of the podcast, and then next week we will continue with either the greatest fights of all time series on the Hitman Chronicles or an historical overview of, God forbid, the latest great pop figure that ever lived. Okay. My first question is from one of the prognosticators of the last week, Kobe. Kobe asks, who's your top 5 to 10 NFL running backs? Well, I'm only going to go with my lifetime. I started watching pro football, the NFL, in 1977. My father's number one was Jim Brown. My father's number two was Walter Payton. Number three, O.J. Simpson. Those were my father's top three. And my father loved Barry Sanders. Matter of fact, I think Barry was my father's number three. Jim Brown, O.J. was his number four. Jim Brown was my father's number one. My father's number two was Walter Payton. My father's number three was Barry Sanders. My father's number four was O.J. Simpson. And my father's number five was Earl Campbell. All right. My top five off the top of my head. Number one, Walter Payton. Number two, Barry Sanders. This is from 1977 until today. Those are my top two. Hands down, Peyton, Barry Sanders. Number three, even though I hate the team. I don't hate the guy. The guy's a great dude. My number three is Emmitt Smith. I mean, the numbers don't lie. He had a great offensive line. Not as flashy as Walter Peyton or Barry Sanders, but man, he was effective and he was a clutch running back. He's the third greatest running back I ever saw. Number four would be Earl Campbell. Earl Campbell would have been number one, but he broke down too soon. From 1978 to 1980, Earl Campbell was the greatest running back I ever saw. That being said, he can't go no higher than number four on my list. Number five, Adrian Peterson, Minnesota Vikings legend. The man was just a beast. Inside, outside, you name it, he was phenomenal. Number six, the legendary Los Angeles Rams running back, the Gazelle, the one and only man, what's my man's name? Eric Dickerson would be my number six. My number seven, Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry's had a tremendous career. He's been the only consistent offense on the Tennessee Titans his entire career. Derrick Henry, my number seven. Number eight, Tony Dorsett was phenomenal, phenomenal. In his rookie year, won a Super Bowl with the Dallas Cowboys. And that was the one thing they were missing when they drafted Tony Dorsett, was an explosive running back. And Dorsett complimented Roger Staubach and those great wide receivers. And his rookie year, they won it all, 1977. And he had a great career with the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, went to the Denver Broncos and he was a shell of a shell of a shell. But still, he had a phenomenal career. So that's eight so far. So let me review the first eight before I think about who's 9 and 10. Number one, Walter Payton. This is my list, right? Number two, Barry Sanders. Number three, Emmitt Smith. Number four, Earl Campbell. Number five, Adrian Peterson. Number six, Eric Dickerson. Number seven, Derrick Henry. And I just mentioned who my number eight was, and now I forgot all of a sudden. What the heck is wrong with my memory? I just mentioned who my number... Oh, Tony Dorsett. Tony Dorsett was my number 8. Who would be my number 9 and number 10 greatest running back of my lifetime? And I'm trying to think, and I'm trying to think out loud. Let's go through some of the teams. No, there's not a Giant on my list. There's not a Jet on my list. Curtis Martin, let's push Curtis Martin to the side. You also had, could Curtis Martin make my top 10? Let's keep looking. Miami Dolphins never really had in my lifetime that go-to running back because Ricky Williams didn't play long enough to make anybody's list. New England Patriots, they also had Curtis Martin. But right now I'm pushing Curtis Martin to the side. Oh, okay. Edgar and James and Marshall Faulk round out my top 10. Edgar and James and Marshall Faulk. And you know what? Other than my top 4, 5 through 10, you could flip-flop. You can make an argument that number 10 is number 5 and so forth. I'm dead set on my top 4 because Walter Payton was the greatest running back I ever saw. Barry Sanders, I mean, unbelievable. And the only reason I give Payton an advantage over Barry Sanders, he won a Super Bowl. He was just as effective as Barry on bad teams, but he won a Super Bowl. And he had some great playoff games. Wow. Barry Sanders in a playoff game had -1 yards. Can't do that. You can't be the greatest running back to ever live and gain -1 yards in a playoff game. And that being said, Barry Sanders was special. He was special. Emmitt Smith's the all-time leading career rusher. He's got to be top 5, so I put him at 3. And he won multiple Super Bowls. And number 4, Earl Campbell, only because from 1978 to 1980, he was the greatest running back I ever saw. 5 through 10, if you want to say Marshall Faulk. 5 through 10, Marshall Faulk, Edgar and James, Adrian Peterson, Chris Henry. All those cats could make an argument for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So, Kobe, thank you for that great question. And now on to... the questions I got on Twitter. If you want your questions answered here on the podcast, hashtag Ask Rob Silva. Okay, here we go. Jay Baby Ears wants to know about the infamous December 28th, 1991 City College stampede. I was supposed to go to this concert, ladies and gentlemen. It was supposed to be a basketball game, a celebrity basketball game, and after the game would be over, there was supposed to be a concert with the guys playing in the basketball game. I believe Jodeci and Run DMC were involved in the game. The game was promoted by Puff Daddy, that piece of shit, Sean Combs. Sean Combs sold many more tickets than seats. And when they opened up the doors, a huge stampede occurred. People was running. Over 3,000 people. I think it was only there was only 2,500 seats. So they outsold by about 500 seats. And unfortunately, 9 young people died. Now, I was supposed to go to that basketball game / concert. But a week before the show, I saw that there were tickets available to go see wrestling the night before. And so I sold my tickets, which were $20 each. And went and bought tickets instead to go see wrestling at the Meadowlands Friday the 27th. And it's a good thing I did that. Now, my girlfriend at the time was 2 months pregnant with my beloved son. And I told her, I don't want to go to the concert. I went and got wrestling tickets. I sold the tickets. Oh, she was heated. She cursed me out the whole nine. I was like, you could be mad all you want. So it's over. I already sold the tickets. Oh, she was, oh, Rob, how could you do that? You didn't even ask me. I said, well, shit, I bought the tickets to begin with. And it wasn't your money. But you promised. I said, I changed my mind. And then after the incident occurred, we were living together at the time. That Sunday morning, the 29th, when we heard over the radio what happened, she looked at me and she was like, I'm so sorry for being mad at you. I said, look, you had every right to be mad. I promised I would take you to go see this game / concert. I changed my mind. I know you was upset. I wasn't feeling the game. I don't know. You know, people say God intervenes. She was pregnant. She would have got hurt. And I probably would have been fighting somebody because she's pregnant. But I didn't know any of that going in. I just didn't want to go. And I'm a huge Jodeci fan. But I would rather go see wrestling. And if I don't sell those tickets, I didn't have the money. Ladies and gentlemen, at that point in time, I had a full-time job and I was a full-time college student. All my money went into paying the bills, paying the rent, paying my tuition, and trying to save money because she was pregnant. And I was going to need that money after she gave birth. So that's what I was doing. So whatever concerts or shows I wanted to go to, I had to be money conscious. I budgeted everything. I couldn't go to both. Even though one was on a Friday night, one was a Saturday night, I couldn't go to both. I had to pick one. And I was a huge wrestling fan at the time. And even though I'm a huge music fan, I wanted to go see wrestling. So I took my brother to see the wrestling on a Friday night. Saturday night, I spent the night with my ex. She was my lady at the time. She's 2 months pregnant. We sitting there watching TV, and she was also mad. She was like, we could have been at the show. I said, well, could have been, could have, would have, should have. It didn't happen. Nothing you could do about it. No need to cry over spilled milk. Thank God that my selfishness saved maybe three lives, my life, her life, and our baby's life. Thank you again, Jay, for a great question. That's what happened. In terms of what happened that night and in terms of my experience, I was 23 years old at the time. All right. Why Diggy ask, what's my Mount Rushmore of TV moms? This is a tough one. I didn't even try and study this. I'm trying to do this off the top of my head. Number one is Claire Huxtable. Period. End of story. She was phenomenal. Felicia Rashad as Claire Huxtable. She was a no-nonsense lawyer who on The Cosby Show kept her husband in check and all her kids never disrespected her, and she always gave you wise advice. She was a great mom. She was a great role model. To be a great mom, you have to be a great role model. And she was a great role model. I put her at number one. Number two, Janet Dubois on Good Times. Wilona. Phenomenal mother. When Penny, played by Janet Jackson, was being abused by her mother, played by Kim Fields' mama in real life, she intervened and adopted Penny. And she was the mother Penny needed. If Penny would have stayed with her real mother, Penny probably would have died because that woman was beating her with irons and hangers and all types of nonsense. It was the first time you ever saw child abuse on network television when Lona stepped in and she saved that girl's life and she became a great mom. So we've got Claire Huxtable from The Cosby Show, Willona from Good Times. My number three is a recurring character. She wasn't a full-time cast member, but whenever she came on the show, she gave her son the greatest advice possible, and she gave her son much-needed loving and compassion when he needed it. And that was the legendary Patti LaBelle as Adele Wayne on A Different World. Patti was phenomenal in that role. She was born to play Adele Wayne. I wish she would have. She couldn't have been a series regular because the family lived in Brooklyn. Dwayne Wayne was going to college in Virginia, Hillman College. But when she did appear on the show, she was phenomenal. She was the perfect polar opposite to Whitley's mom. Whitley's mom was a pain in the ass, played by Diane Carroll. Now, who would be my fourth greatest TV mom? You know who I loved? My Wife and Kids, played by Tisha Campbell. She rounds out my top four Mount Rushmore of moms. She was a great mother to her children. Always was there for them. She's my number four. So, Why Diggy, once again, thank you for that question. Tisha Campbell from My Wife and Kids. Claire Huxtable from, played by Felicia Rashad. Willona, played by Janet Dubois. And Adele Wayne, played by Patti LaBelle. All right, let's see what other questions we have. Okay, here's another question from Why Diggy. Who's worse, Tim Bradley and Joe Tessitore or Sergio Mora, Chris Mannix and Todd Grisham? You know what? I heard Grisham today. I heard Bradley and Tessitore today. Bradley and Tessitore didn't annoy me that much this week. I just finished watching the broadcast. I mean, Tim Bradley doesn't shut up, and he's horrible. But right now, if you put a gun to my head, Todd Grisham and Mora and Mannix are the worst. And Todd Grisham today, not knowing who Mark Nelson was, talk about, oh, that referee, whoever he is, he's so small. How's he going to handle these behemoths? Mark Nelson is one of the two best referees in the sport today. Don't you fucking know that? You fucking idiot. Boxing announcing at its all-time low, ladies and gentlemen. No other sport would allow such incompetence to rule the airwaves like boxing has. You won't see that in the NFL. You won't see that in Major League Baseball. And you won't see that in the NHL. And you definitely won't see that in the NFL. All right, let me see if there are any other questions. Let me go to my other account to see if this. Oh, I do have a question on email. Hold on. My man Dan Cisneros, recent inductee to the New Mexico Hall of Fame. He asks, I noticed that Margarito's win in the first meeting with Cotto was still listed as a win, but the illegal hand wraps were involved. So I wonder why isn't that changed to a no contest? Well, Dan, if you remember, they didn't know about the illegal wraps until his fight against Shane Mosley 6 months later when Nassim Richardson, may he forever rest in peace, caught the illegal wraps. They had to rewrap Margarito's hands, and then Margarito went and took a beating from Shane Mosley, and Margarito was never the same after that fight because Mosley beat the holy hell out of that cheating bastard. Now, I believe, like you believe, Dan, that Margarito cheated in his fight against Cotto, but you couldn't prove it because they didn't catch it that night against Cotto. So you couldn't change it because how can you prove something happened? Now, you could go with your gut instinct, but in a court of law, that's not going to stand. So that's why that fight was never overturned. I wish they would have been overturned, but you saw in the rematch when there was no illegal hand wraps what happened. Cotto beat the holy hell out of Margarito. Okay, also, if Ryan Garcia's failed drug test for PED stands, will they or should they change his win over Devin Haney to a no contest? If the New York State Athletic Commission comes out with the findings of the B sample being dirty, they're going to, I believe, precedents exist for such a ruling. Remember, Dan, back in 2006, or was it 2005, rather, back in 2005, I attended this fight in Madison Square Garden. James Toney beat John Ruiz. A few days later, the New York State Athletic Commission drug test came out that he tested positive for a PED, and the fight was ruled a no contest, and Ruiz was given back his WBA heavyweight title. There's already been precedence for this. So if they determine that Ryan Garcia was dirty using PEDs, they're going to do what they did with Toney versus Ruiz. They're going to change it to a no contest. There's already a precedent. And you go by, in a court of law, you go by precedents, right? The precedent's already been set. So we will see what happens in a few days. And next week, we can talk more about it. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you guys for listening. This was a fun show to do this week. Thanks to all the great questions. Once again, if you want your questions answered on the podcast, go to Twitter, hashtag AskRobSilver, post a question, and I will answer it on the podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, next week, we will be doing the final part of the Life and Times of Sugar Ray Leonard, his November 1988 fight against Donnie Lalonde. And then we will probably do either a fight recap show next week. I know Chris Billups-Smith fights. Or, depending on what happens in the Ryan Garcia situation, we might just do a special. I think we'll do a combined episode of what does the future look like for Ryan Garcia and a fight recap show next week. So we'll see. We'll see. I think that's the plan right now. Until next time, when we talk Sugar Ray Leonard versus Donnie Lalonde, I want everybody out there to continue to always be blessed and be a blessing.